This conference will now be recorded.
First item of business is doing a roll call for the minutes. When I call your name, if you could please signify aye or present or here so we know you're connected. So for the record, Peter Lisi is present. Ben Barnes. Ben. Marty Budd.
Here.
Andrew Foster.
Here.
Daryl Hill. Daryl. Steve Kitowitz. Steve. Julie Savino.
He apparently is on the other line.
Here.
All right.
Hello.
Steve, was that you? Did you just join?
Yeah, I'm having problems with our new computers, and this we don't normally use GoToMeeting.
All right, so we've got.
I had to dial in.
All right, and still no Daryl Hill or Ben Barnes. Okay, for Chesla, Jeanette Weldon.
Yes, I'm here.
Denise Aguilera?
Here.
Kevin Berry? Kevin? Deb Galley?
Here.
Josh Herluck?
Here.
Carly Levin?
Here.
Cynthia Peoples?
I'm present.
Shannon?
Here.
Natalia Rosio?
Here.
Kara Stewart?
Here.
Anyone else from Chesla that I missed?
Joanne Mackwitz is here.
Joanne, all right. Anyone else?
Peter, I didn't hear you call Julie Savino's name.
I did.
Oh,
I've got her on. Julie, you're there, aren't you?
Yes, I'm here. I'm good. I'm good.
Yep. Julie's present. And in addition to Chesla and board members, is Judith Blank on the line?
I am. Good morning.
Thank you.
Yeah, good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Joe Santoro? Tim Webb?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for allowing me to attend.
Yeah. Lou DeLuca?
Yes, I'm here.
And representatives from Cohn Resnick, I'm assuming, are on. Melissa?
Yes, here.
And Josh Labonte?
I'm here.
Anyone else from Cohn Resnick?
Hi, Kristen Brown.
Okay, thank you. And are there any other advisors, consultants on the call that I missed? Anyone else?
Good morning. Yes, this is Ben McGuire from Hilltop Securities as well.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Glenn Rybacki from Day Pitney is on.
Thank you, Glenn.
Any Melissa other? Bathon from U.S. Bank.
Okay. Anyone else? All right, thank you very much. Per our agenda, next order of business are the minutes. Approval of the minutes from our June 25th meeting. I hope folks have had a chance to take a look at them. Is there a motion to accept the minutes from June 25th?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
And we have a motion and a second. Are there any comments, edits, clarifications to those minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the motion to accept the minutes of June 25th, please say aye.
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 Is anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Motion passes. Thank you very much. The next item of business is the election of our vice chair, and I'm very pleased to report that Julie Savino has very graciously agreed to continue as vice chair, which I am very appreciative of. And I would like to entertain a motion to re-elect Julie as vice chair. Someone like to make the motion? Thank you, Marty. And do we have a second?
I can, Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew. There's a motion and it's been seconded to re-elect Julie as vice chair. Any comments, questions, discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Julie, thank you very much for continuing.
Thank you. It's my pleasure actually to work with all of you. So thank you for considering me.
Okay. Next item of business, the draft of the financials. I think we'll probably turn it over to the folks from Cohen Resnick. Is that going to be Melissa?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, let me pull up the presentation that we've prepared for today.
Melissa, before you start,
while she's doing that, there is a note on page 28 that we have suspended collections through September 30th. And I didn't see on the agenda a motion to extend that. Maybe Josh will bring that up later. But and I don't know whether if in fact we act today, there would be a subsequent event changing the note on page 13 of the financial statements or page 28 of the package we got.
Good point, Marty. And I think after we do the, when we get to that point, I think it's a great item for discussion and we'll field it then.
Good, we'll thank you.
Yeah, no, definitely. Good point.
Okay. So we could we'll definitely discuss that right after we go through our presentation. Is Carly going to do anything prior to our presentation or are we set to go? Anyone from the Chesla team or Chiefs team? Just want to confirm before we start.
I have some items to go over. I just wasn't sure if I was going before or after. I apologize. I've been out for a little over a week, so I'm not sure if I'm going before you or not.
Okay. Either one works.
Why don't you go ahead, Melissa?
Go ahead, Melissa.
Sure.
Cynthia, why don't you go ahead and start, and then we'll have Carly follow you.
Excellent.
Okay,
excellent.
Thank you.
So Melissa Ferrucci, partner with Cohen Resnick, thank you for having us today. I'm joined by Kristen Brown, the director on the engagement, as well as Josh Labonte, who is the senior on this engagement. I am new to this engagement as partner upon the retirement of Kim Nardone. I'd like to first start our presentation by thanking the chief of staff, management team, and all staff that worked really hard on this audit this year. We did this audit 100% virtual, which was new for all of us, and the team has put a lot of hard work and effort into this. So just wanted to show our gratitude and give the team some recognition and thanks. Today, for our presentation, we'll discuss the various reports that were issued. We'll provide you with the required communications as part of the audit, and we'll talk about some future considerations and new GASBs coming down the line. Some notable items to report in terms of the chief audit. We reported an unmodified or clean opinion over the financial statements in accordance with generally accepted government auditing standards. We also prepared an agreed upon procedures report for CSLF, as well as the CSLF tax return, which Kristen will talk about a little bit later today. We have no findings or recommendations to report. In terms of the required communications, the required communications are as follows. There were no presentation changes to the audit this year, no new accounting policies. The significant estimates prepared by management were over the allowance for doubtful accounts in the fair value of investments. We've had no significant audit adjustments and one immaterial uncorrected misstatement, no significant unusual transactions, no disagreements with management, and no other major issues, no consultations with any other accountants, no difficulties in performing the audit, and management has advised us that they are not aware of any instances of fraud or illegal acts, and no instances of fraud or illegal acts have come to our attention as part of this audit. In addition, we'll be obtaining from management a signed representation letter, which we'll get after today. Finally, there was no new GASB guidance implemented as part of this audit. And now I'll turn it over to Kristen Brown, who will discuss CHESLA in a little bit more detail.
Good morning, Kristen Brown, Director with Cohn-Resnick. We do a high-level overview. Carly gets more into the details for your presentation. For CHESLA, you guys had a very strong balance sheet this year. Your net position increased by $451,000. There was a resulting increase in your allowances on your loans receivables, as displayed on the screen, and you had transferred $500,000 in from CSLF for the scholarships. As part of our audit, things that we looked at, we wanted to look at the allowances as part of the audit, which we do every year, but we took a deeper dive because of the fact that we do have COVID and there is the chance that allowances may change. Based on our discussions with staff and looking at the picture, no significant changes were made to the methodology in calculating the allowances this year. They will be considering this going forward as well in case anything changes in light of COVID. We also looked at from COVID the potential of going concern with your organization. This is something that's always done in our audits. However, with COVID, again, there's a heightened scrutiny on that. We did not, we agreed with management's decision that there was no issues with the going concern that would be have to be put on your our statements for CHESLA. And then, do I do CSLF now or do I do that later? I think I can go through CSLF now. CSLF also had a strong balance sheet with the increase in the net position of 1.3. Again, the transfers to CHESLA. In this case, you did have a decrease in the loan loss reserves, and that really is a result of the fact that your loan portfolio is going down as you're not issuing any new debt. Any new receivables. Again, we looked at this as well, and it seemed reasonable as the calculation that they did.
I had a question on page 15. No, it's actually page 16 of your presentation in 31 in the packet. It says the rates for student borrowers in the CSLF portfolio have been fixed. That's at the top line of that page. Of course, you then say on page 17, under economic factors, that they're variable. Maybe somebody can explain whether the CSLF portfolios are fixed interest or variable.
This is Tim Webb with Hilltop Securities. I can answer that if you would like me to.
Yes, Tim, please go ahead.
Okay. Federal Family Education Loan Program loans have two sources of yield. The borrower interest rate is one, and then there is what's called the lender yield. The borrower interest rate is generally a fixed rate. The lender yield is based off of a spread to a particular index depending upon when the loan was originated. So the borrower rate remains fixed while the yield to the holder can be variable.
Thank you very much. Very helpful. A reminder. Thank you.
You bet. I'm happy to go into it deeper if you'd like me to.
That's deep enough.
Okay. I have a tendency to go into the weeds. I apologize.
No.
That's very.
I knew this, but I didn't focus on it. Thank you.
Very helpful, Tim. Thank you.
Okay, so as Melissa had mentioned, there were no new accounting standards adopted during the current year. There is still the lingering leases standard that keeps getting extended for adoption, and that will be where leases will have to go on your financial statements as assets and liabilities. That will be for the periods after December 15th, 2020, with their most recent extension. And here is our contact information. Please feel free to use that if you have any questions during the year or need any guidance. We can most surely help you with that.
Okay. Any questions for Melissa, Kristen, or Josh? Anyone? Okay. Thank you very much, each of you.
Okay.
All right. I think the next agenda item,
Peter, should have a motion.
I'm sorry?
Peter, this is Nate. You should have a vote to accept the report.
Okay.
Draft audited financial statements.
In that regard, I have a question whether our audit committee has reviewed this both for CHESLA and CSLF and whether the CHEA audit committee has reviewed this.
And
go ahead, Jeanette.
I was just going to say, Marty, the audit is technically a CHEFA audit that encompasses CHEFA and its subsidiaries. So the CHEFA Audit Finance Committee reviewed the audit yesterday, and the CHEFA board voted to accept the audit yesterday.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So we do need an action item, an approval to accept the auditor's report. Would someone like to make that motion?
This is Steve. So I'll moved. Make the motion.
All right, Steve moved it. Marty seconded it. Thank you. Are there any questions, comments, discussion, additional questions for our folks from Cohn-Resnick? All right, hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the report, please say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, thank you very much. Motion passes. And thank you, Melissa, Kristen, and Josh.
Thank you.
Jeanette, Executive Director's Report.
Okay. I want to start by mentioning that we are beginning to gear up for the next or the 2021 legislative session. And we are starting to consider the initiatives for our legislative agenda, which we expect to bring to the board at the November board meeting. But in the meantime, I wanted to make you aware of some of the things we have in mind. And the specific one that I wanted to mention today that's a CHESLA initiative is one that relates to, that I think is important, just given the moment that we are in currently and the mission of CHESLA. And I think it's very important for CHESLA programs to seek to address racial inequities to the extent that we are able to make a contribution or make efforts in that regard. So the program that we anticipate including in the agenda, the legislative agenda, is a minority teacher recruitment initiative. and it would be patterned, it would be a loan subsidy program patterned after the program that we put forth to the General Assembly last session that was directed at encouraging recent grads to stay in Connecticut. If you recall, that was going to be offering a reduced loan rate if those graduates committed to staying in Connecticut for a number of years. And so what we hope to do this year is to put forth kind of a variation on that, which would be minority teacher recruitment oriented, and it would be an interest rate subsidy program for minority teacher recruits who commit to working in Connecticut public schools. And so obviously this is not going to completely solve the issues. You know, this is a it's an initiative of the State Department of Education. There are efforts that have already been underway in regard to this. So, you know, this program's not going to solve it, but it could certainly be another tool to contribute to enhancing minority teacher recruitment. So it could be used to incentivize Connecticut students to go into teaching, and it could also, on the refinance product side, be used as an incentive to perhaps get some teachers from out of state to relocate here. And so I think the positive impact of minority teachers on students in schools with significant minority populations is well documented. It's also well documented that right now in the public schools in Connecticut, there's about 10% minority teacher representation, while the student body is about, you know, 40-45% minority. So there's definitely room for some improvement in that regard. We are, so again, similar to what we had proposed last year, this interest, this loan rate subsidy would have to be funded in some way. And so we would still be proposing that it be funded through state bonding, although, you know, we have to go through the numbers to get a sense of what that number might look like. The expectation is it's, you know, it's not going to be a very large number, or certainly it will be below what we were seeking last session when we went in with our proposal. At that point included $15 million of state bonding. I'm anticipating that this will be significantly less than that. So we are, just to lay some groundwork and get some initial feedback, we have a meeting on Monday that's in connection with some CHIFA initiatives as well, but we will be making reference to, this is with Representative Jason Rojas, who is the House Chair of the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee. So this will be referenced in that meeting. And then at the end of the month, we have a meeting with the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Economic and Community Development, Gwendolyn Thames, along with the new head of a workforce development unit within DECD, where again, you know, we will be talking about a range of items, but this will be one of the ones that will be mentioned just for purposes of generally getting some of their support.
Jeanette, if I understand this, we would forgive interest rates or lower the interest rate, and then the Connecticut government would fill in the interest that we have forgiven to the individual?
Well, we're not describing it as a forgiveness of necessarily, but it's patterned after the same structure we had proposed last year, which is, you know, if you were an undergrad, you're getting a regular CHESL loan, just like everyone else, same loan rate as everyone else. Upon graduation, if you commit to, you know, if you're a minority teacher recruit and you commit to teaching in Connecticut for, you know, actually for the life of your loan rate reduction, then you would have a reduction in your loan rate. The those dollars would be coming into the trust in, instead of from loan repayments, that subsidy would be funded through state bond funding. So the concept is that it would all end up in the trust in any event, and then, you know, things proceed as they normally would in terms of the trust making payments on debt service. It's the same structure that we had proposed last year.
Jeanette, I would say that if I understand you're making the rounds of fellow advocates for these proposals, but if you're going to propose legislation that has some kind of budgetary impact in Connecticut for the biennium, that you should include OPM as a
yes. So certainly, what we typically do when we, as we are preparing the full legislative agenda, of which this would be a part, we do have, as we did last year, we would have a meeting with OPM and we would present the full comprehensive legislative agenda for both CHIPA and CHESLA in advance of the session. And so that is, as well as bringing it to the board. So that's still the plan.
Do you need to talk to the treasurer as well? Or
yes, all of that would be part of it, clearly. The last thing I was going to mention is that CHIFA and its subsidiaries, so therefore including CHESLA, were now new members of Metro Hartford Alliance. And yesterday I taped a portion of a discussion for their radio show, Pulse of the Region. And the focus really is very much on CHESLA programs and how some of their members might view some CHESLA programs as employee benefits. So that was the focus of the program. It's airing over the weekend, but I think this membership will be a good way of increasing awareness of CHESLA and its products. So that's all I have.
Jeanette, did you say when that was going to be broadcast?
I can send that around. It's on Saturday and Sunday, and it's okay. On three different radio stations, but we can circulate that.
That'd be great. That'd be helpful. Thank you.
And then lastly, just wanted, this is just an FYI, I think we included, this was just an outstanding item to get everyone the final version of the state audit. So that's in the, everyone's board package. So that's all I have for my portion. And I'll turn it, unless there are any other questions, I'll turn it over to Josh for the portfolio update.
Any further questions for Jeanette? Okay, Josh, you're up.
All right, thank you. So before I get started, I thought I would touch on Marty's question from earlier regarding the collections and tax intercepts. I don't think we've made a final decision there. Jeanette, Denise, and I had a preliminary meeting this week to discuss that. From a pure revenue perspective, over the last 2 years, we've averaged about $31,000 a month in CCA revenue. Based on the halting of the tax intercepts, sending loans to collections, and no collection efforts, we've seen that essentially cut in half since the pandemic. So we're averaging about $15,000 a month in CCA revenue. That's all to say that, you know, should we decide to extend the collection relief or tax intercept relief, I don't see a substantial impact to the trust. Based on our preliminary discussions, it seems like we are leaning towards not extending those benefits. Part of the reason for that is, you know, I normally make collection efforts when loans are 120 days past due. Those were also halted when the pandemic hit. There is a little bit of a gap there. So if somebody's 120 days past due, and I'm not reaching out to them, really the only communication the borrower or family is receiving is their normal monthly statement from UAS. What that causes is, you know, there's not significant attention brought to the delinquencies. Obviously, we're sending delinquency notices up into the 120-day threshold, but after that, it's normally relying on my outreach. So, you know, that's caused, you know, more delinquencies in the portfolio. And those are some of the items we are weighing in terms of extending those benefits through the end of the year to mirror what the federal program has done with their loans. Are there any questions off of that? I don't know if Denise or Jeanette has anything to add. I would say we also checked with Judith. And Tim, Judith does not believe there would be a disclosure issue in extending those benefits. And I believe from Denise's perspective, there is nothing prohibiting us from doing so. So Jeanette or Denise, do you have anything to add, or does anyone have any questions regarding that?
Yeah, I'll add that, as Josh mentioned, we have had discussions internally, and at this point, you know, we are definitely leaning towards we are not extending, and I would certainly think that we'll finalize that decision within, you know, if it's anything other than that, then obviously, you know, there would be implications for that language in the audit. But the expectation right now is that we are probably not going to extend, and so we can certainly confirm that before you need to go final, you know, before you're printing the final version of the audit. So I think that it will be, you know, definitively resolved before, you know, within the next day or so.
I think maybe we ought to authorize management to extend it just in case you change your mind in the next 48 hours. But I think this is a board matter and it shouldn't be extended without the board's approval. So I don't know what our lawyers suggest, but I would propose that we authorize management to extend it if they so decide.
I think that'd be an excellent.
I guess the question I have in that regard is if the board authorizes to extend it, if management so desires, does that have impact on the wording that is currently in
right.
the audit? I mean, I'm asking that of Cohn.
Yeah.
Well, if in fact in the next 2 days you decide not to, my guess is it would not have to be included in the audit.
Right.
If they can wait for the 2 days before they finalize. But this, as you say, is a Cohn & Resnick question.
Right. This is Melissa Ferrucci here. So I think offline we're going to get more into the details on this, but I would say that we can wait. We have to submit the audit, go final by September 30th. So we have a couple of days we can wait for that determination.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So Anything else with that topic, or can I move on?
Well, the question is whether we should have a resolution or not.
Denise, do you have an opinion on that, Denise?
Sure. I think it would be appropriate just to pass a motion authorizing management to extend the collections efforts if they deem it appropriate.
If they deem it appropriate. Okay.
So moved.
I was just going to ask you that, Marty. Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
I'll second. Yeah.
Okay. Marty, thank you for raising that topic. The motion has been made and seconded. Is there any further discussion or questions?
This is Daryl Hill. Question on the motion. And maybe I'm not aware of the specificity of it, but it's a blanket motion to extend however management deems fit, or are we specifically authorizing a framework for how long it might be extended?
If we were to, on the off chance we were to do anything, it wouldn't be beyond, the thought is December 31st, because some of this, the thought was tracking off of what the feds are doing with the federal loan program, where they sort of extended things until the end of the calendar year. So that would be the time frame if we were to do anything.
And that would be the...
Well, maybe we ought to add, it suggested authorizing them if they so decide till December 30th.
Right, putting a book out on it. Right.
That would make the current 120 days what day count?
I'm sorry, Daryl, what was that?
That would make...
I'm not sure what you mean.
I thought we were currently extending for 120 days, but had flexibility to not pursue collections even at the 120 days. So my question generally is, if we're going to authorize extension for what time frame? And I'm fine through the end of the year, but I think it should have some parameter.
I will attempt to clarify that. So to clarify, the 120 days is when a borrower is 120 days delinquent. That's when the servicer stops sending delinquency notices, and the borrowers would be hearing from me directly about the past due balance on their loan. In terms of the halting of sending borrowers to collections, halting collection efforts, and halting tax intercepts, those were initially done for a 3-month period, and we would be looking to extend that here for an additional 3 months through the end of the year.
Okay, so do we need an amended motion to reference the extension from 90 days to 180?
I will accept that amendment as the proposer.
Thank you, Marty.
And for the record, I'll formally suggest that amendment so it can be accepted.
Good. Thank you, Daryl. Okay, further discussion, comments, and questions, just to be clear on this? All right, hearing none, all those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Sorry. Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, thank you. Motion passes. All right, Josh, we're back to you for portfolio update, Josh.
And if I can just jump in for one second. One thing we forgot to do in connection with the overview of the audited financials was to have Carly summarize her the point she was planning to make with regard to the audited financials. So I'm wondering if we should perhaps let Carly do that at this point, and before Josh goes into some other aspects of the portfolio update.
Good point, Jeanette. I'm sorry for the oversight. Yes, we should have Carly go ahead now at this point. Thank you. Carly?
Thank you very much. This is Carly Levin.
So I'm going to touch on a few key points regarding Chesla and their audit for June 30, 2020. The operating revenues were $9.4 million, which is a decrease from fiscal 2019 of $2.7 million. The primary reason for this decrease was the CSLF contributions for 2020, which were $1.5 million compared to $4 million in fiscal 2019. Operating expenses decreased by $61,000 from fiscal 2019. Main reason was a decrease in the scholarship expense for fiscal 2020, which was $1.5 million compared to $2 million the previous fiscal year. For our total operating loss was negative $1.4 million, which is a decrease of $2.7 million from fiscal 2019. Some of the contributing factors for this decrease include the loan financing fees, bond issuance costs, and the provision for loan loss. The total change in net position for fiscal 2020 after non-operating income is positive $451,000, which was a decrease of $2.8 million from fiscal 2019. And actually, that information you could find on page 75 of the board packet, so I apologize for not mentioning that earlier. I don't know if there's any questions. Otherwise, I just have a couple other points to mention regarding the balance sheet, which is on page 74 of the board packet, or it's page 57 of the actual audit. The balance sheet and the income statement, they break out the agency, other programs, and the two bond resolutions. Regarding the student loan receivable, net of the allowance was $135.6 million. An increase of $3 million from fiscal 2019. The in-school program had an increase of $2.2 million, and refinance program an increase of $800,000. The bonds payable for the current fiscal year was $193 million, which was an increase of $16.5 million over fiscal 2019. In fiscal 2020, Chesla closed two new bond issues totaling approximately $26.9 million. And the total change in that position for June 30, 2020 was $33.3 million. I don't know if anyone has questions regarding anything.
No. Any questions for Carly? No, I guess not. Okay, thank you, Carly.
Okay, so I will continue on. I will start on page 84 of the board package. Here we have the loan disbursement data. The fiscal year 2020 ended with disbursements totaling $24.4 million, which is about $500,000 behind fiscal year 2019. Some of the downturn can be attributed due to the pandemic. We did have borrowers that canceled or reduced second disbursements. From a peer numbers perspective, when you compare fiscal 20 to fiscal 19, the downturn would be almost wholly attributed to quarter two. So I think it's really, really a combination of both. The lesser volume in quarter due combined with the pandemic, and you have about a $500,000 difference. All in all, still a strong year. As you can see, it's the second highest disbursement volume over the past 5 years. So I think we had a solid year nonetheless. Moving on to page 85. You have the market segment data. I just wanted to point out here, I think you have seen these graphs in a couple prior meetings, but these graphs are new with Campus Door. They are entirely generated by Campus Door each quarter, and they add some nice visual appeal to the market segment data. On page 86, the next page, in terms of our top three schools, status quo at the top, Sacred Heart, UConn, and Quinnipiac. Sacred Heart was our number one Connecticut school for the year, so kudos to Julie for that. I would also like to point out that University of New Haven also crossed the $1 million disbursement threshold. Moving on to page 87, we have the 2019B comparison to the cash flow assumptions. Most of the 2019B disbursements are made at a 5.15 fixed interest rate. The remaining funds being used since the 2020 bond deal completed are being offered at the 4.85% rate. As you will see for the 2019B comparison, we are about 1.8 million ahead of the cash flow assumptions. We have committed essentially all of the 2019B funds thus far. And we are just waiting for those last disbursements to go out. So in very
go ahead, Mark. You say, yeah, Josh, you say you're ahead, but it looks like we have 22 million compared to what the cash flow assumes is 24. How is September looking?
I mean, September is looking good. I would also say this comparison includes the origination fees, and I believe the assumptions do as well. From a pure loan account perspective, the 2019B loan account, after you include the committed applications, 2019B, the funds are going to be completely used up.
Thank you.
No problem. Moving on to page 88, we have the in-school 2020B comparison to the cash flow assumptions. The 2020B disbursements are made at a 485 rate. Obviously, this is very early in the cash flow assumptions. Through August, 2020B is about 350,000 of the cash flow assumptions. So in decent shape there. I also wanted to touch on from an overall, Chesla in school portfolio perspective. We have, West account in forbearance, than at the start of the pandemic and what was disclosed in the 2020 OS. The in-school portfolio currently has 0.13% in a regular hardship forbearance. Historically, that's around 2%. From a natural disaster COVID forbearance perspective, the in-school portfolio is currently at 1.15%. And, there's really no historical comparison for a natural disaster. But for a way of comparison, that natural disaster percentage was at about 5% in the 2020 OS. So those initial forbearance periods are completing, and the number of extension requests we've received are not that significant. I believe it's between 10 and 13%. From an in-school delinquency perspective, historically we're at about 4% in the 2020 OS. For that disclosure, we're at about 11%. Based on the numbers yesterday, the in-school portfolio appears to be at about 20%. Again, as we touched on with collections, there's a bit of a gap there right now with those that are 120 days delinquent. But we are definitely going to keep an eye on that. We've talked about reaching out to everybody delinquent. You know, maybe that's me personally, or maybe that's an email we draft up through UAS and make sure that gets sent out. Because I fear, you know, when we had the COVID forbearance, we did email the entire portfolio that it was available. As you know, there's some people that may overlook an email. I fear there are some of these delinquent in our portfolio, you know, they may be unaware and think they have a federal loan and that we're at 0% and the forbearance is automatic. But I think we probably need to reach out to those that are delinquent just to reiterate that there are forbearances available to help them in their situation, being that they are delinquent. Any further questions?
Yep. Yeah. In the cash flow projection, September is a big month. It has over $4 million. How is September going?
I think September's been solid, and I don't know if Shannon can speak to that, but from what I've seen, the first couple of the weeks have been between anywhere, 1 million and 2 million. So, it seems to be solid so far. I don't know, Shannon, if you have any detail off of that.
Yeah, for the last 4 weeks, we've had a consistent about around 1 million. I think the beginning of the month, we saw about 2 million. So we're consistent. I think we were a little late this year, just obviously because of the school stuff, but we're consistent for the last 4 weeks around that mark.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shannon. So I'll now move on to page 89. This is the Refi CT Series 2019A comparison to the cash flow assumptions. In short, Refi CT has been hit hard due to the pandemic. The disbursements really, staggered off once the pandemic hit in March. You will also note here on this chart, we had zero disbursements for Refi for August. With that, all things considered, I think being about $360,000 behind the cash flow assumptions, being that a pandemic really can't be contemplated, I think that shows the conservative nature of our cash flows. And I don't think we're in too bad of a shape. I would also say from a revenue and debt service perspective, we have no fear of making our November payment. We have excess on the 2019B side for the in-school program, and should that ever be needed, we could always tap into that 2019B excess revenue. But again, in short, I cannot reiterate enough, there's no issues making our November payment for 2019A. And we have significant excess on the in-school side to cover that, should we need that moving forward. Part of the reason the refi portfolio is hit so hard due to the pandemic is that the refi portfolio, 30% of the loans we refinance are federal loans. I don't have details on what federal loans those are. I would imagine the bulk of that are Parent PLUS loans. And also, people, when the borrowers refinance, part of the ease of that is bringing all their loans in under one hood, under one servicer. So I think as long as the federal program is offering the 0% as a COVID benefit, I think the refi program is going to struggle to generate volume. From an overall refi portfolio perspective, the historical hardship forbearance rate has been right around 1%. Disclosed in the 2020 OS, we were at 7%. Currently, that's at 0.45%. So again, like the in-school program, borrowers coming out of their forbearance and not many extensions being requested. from a refi delinquency perspective. Historically, we're at about 3.5%. Currently, that's at 6.3%. So that's double. You know, it's not a huge issue from a cash flow perspective. Lastly, from a portfolio view, you know, despite the high in-school delinquencies, the in-school revenue, for each of the months since the pandemic has been consistent between anywhere from 2 and 2.5 million monthly. So we have not seen drastic changes, despite the delinquency levels rising. And then on the refi side, the refi revenue is again fairly consistent, around $200,000 monthly, give or take. The revenue has not been significantly impacted due to the rising delinquencies. Josh, are there any?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Josh, how long is the federal forbearance to 0% scheduled to go?
As far as I'm aware, that's currently through the end of the calendar year.
So we might have pick up refi after the calendar year.
I think that's the whole.
I just wanted to confirm maybe Judith's question is that our bond resolution allows the sloshing of funds from one set of bonds to another. The refi bonds were taxable and the in-school were non-taxable, but I take it the indenture allows us to take money from the taxable cash flow, from the tax-exempt cash flow and use it to pay off taxable bonds.
Well, it does permit it, and then we would have to deal with the consequences of the tax law. If we use some of the money for an impermissible purpose, we would hope that it would be, you know, within the permitted percentage of quote-unquote bad money.
But also, I think to keep in mind, there's a relatively significant amount of refi loans that were put into the 2019 trust that we already had in place that were not funded with taxable bond proceeds that we put into the trust to create additional equity. And so that those loans are throwing off cash flow as well.
Right.
Judith, I take it money from those loans don't go against bad money.
Correct. Those are tracked separately because, in essence, it's a contribution of equity. It's not, right. They were not financed by bond proceeds, taxable or tax exempt.
And I take it you can't trace the dollars, so you.
We do trace the dollars, Marty.
Yeah, Marty, jumping off of that, we have subsets of 2019A, so we have a 2019A equity loan account and a 2019B equity loan account that tracks those refi contributor loans separately, so we know exactly what revenue is coming in for those refi contributor loans.
Do you think you're going to need more than the revenue from the refi loans in order to support this new bond issue?
Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Tim Webb with Hilltop Securities. When the issue was done back in June, the cash flows were run taking into account a slower origination period, and we also made some assumptions relative to increased deferment and forbearance and increased defaults. Under those scenarios with increased defaults and forbearances, we did not run into any kind of issue with regard to making debt service payment. Obviously, that takes into account the loans that you have in there that are directly pledged to the taxable bonds, as well as the over collateralization. So we can't say that there wouldn't in the future be some kind of problem if we had, you know, who knows what it is, but under the assumptions run, which were significantly more stressful than what the authority has experienced, we do not run into any kind of debt service problem.
Thank you. But one of my concerns was, I forget what term Judith used, but bad money or impermissible money. And my question was whether we have enough cash flow from the refi loans we contributed as equity so that we don't have to take any money from the other loans that were financed with tax-exempt bonds to support this refi deficit, whether the cash flow from the refi loans that we contributed will be sufficient to pick up the refi deficits in this tranche.
Carl, I hate to put you on the spot. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I can review, but the way everything is looking, the money from the refi has been coming in steadily. And Josh and I did review this earlier, and there's really no significant change in what we've been receiving each month for the refi. And there is significant funds in there. And I mean, I'm confident that we won't have issues. And obviously, Josh and I will review, you know, monthly and quarterly to keep an eye on anything. If, you know, anything drastically changes, we will definitely be aware of that and make note of that.
Right. And
this is the only thing we've heard today that could be a disaster. So,
right.
In November, hopefully you'll have a explicit amount of money we took from 2019 portion of refi loans and how much money we took out of that in order to support this tranche of refi loans.
Right, Marty. I think Carly and I can get together after this meeting. You know, we had looked at the refi revenue as a whole. I think Carly and I, after this meeting, can look at specifically the revenue for the refi contributed loans, those equity series, and we can probably circle back with you and the board after the board meeting.
And
good.
But,
thank you very much,
Josh. Josh, that'd be very helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. Josh,
I was just going to add that. You know, all of these part, you know, all of these things are part of the reason why we did not issue any refi bonds in our most current any bonds to finance refi in our most current offering. So the 2020 bond issue did not have a refi component to it at all.
Okay. Josh?
Okay. Good. Yeah, thank you, Peter. So I'll move on to page 90. I mean, I think I basically covered the refi program here, but the fiscal year 20 ended at about 2.3 million or 2.2 million, which was about 1 or 1.1 million behind fiscal year 2019. And that was, unfortunately, the lowest refi fiscal year total ever. And I think I've already touched on the reasons for that, but you can see the volume for the year. Moving on, I would then like to turn to...
Josh, is there any way when we get to... communications and I forget the right term for us to go out marketing that we can market refi bonds. It's interesting. The average savings is 2%. That's a gigantic savings in interest rate. And maybe there is some way that we can skew marketing towards refi in the coming months.
Right. Yeah, I certainly agree. You know, Shannon and I are always exploring ideas to, you know, kind of re-jumpstart the refi volume.
And also, just to add to that, the other way that we are, we expect to grow some refi volume is through this employer outreach effort that we are making, which we've brought to the board's attention previously, and that's where we are working with our counterpart in Rhode Island, RISLA, on an employer outreach program where we can provide supports to employers who want to pay down loans on behalf of their employees. And then part of that is also employees who are also interested in refinancing. We will then be specifically informing those employees of the Refi CT products. So that's another way, that's an initiative where we are in the midst of. And so that's another way that we are looking to grow refi volume.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeanette. So moving on, I'd like to skip to page 94, the strategic plan dashboard. I really just want to touch on the performance data of UAS and Campus Door. UAS over the past few months has met standards, except for the average speed of answer in July. UAS missed the standard due to some call center turnover and larger than normal call volume due to borrowers coming out of their initial COVID or hardship forbearance and inquiring about the current status of their loan. New call center staff was added, and the ASA standard, as you can see, was corrected in August. So we believe we're on the right foot moving forward with UAS. On page 95 and 96, we just have some origination information that is Chesil specific regarding Campus Door. Campus Door met all the metrics for the quarter on both the in-school and refi side. Page 95 is in-school, page 96 is refi. That's it for my update. Are there any further questions?
Questions for Josh? No, very thorough, Josh, as usual. Thank you very
all right.
much.
Thank you. Yep.
Shannon, I think you're next up with the website analytics.
Yep. So I'm going to, because we do this quarterly, I'm just kind of going to summarize because not much has changed. It's been pretty consistent throughout the year. So feel free to ask me any questions that you have. So overall, same goal for each of the websites. Same of the websites is bring brand awareness to Chesla and all of its programs, and the same with CT Dollars and Cents and all of the accessible information on that site. So that's our goal for both sites. Consistently, we've seen that increased on session amounts. So if you look at page 100 specifically, you can see that Chesla had an increase overall in the amount of sessions. And just as a reminder, sessions are defined as group of interactions or engagements taken by the user on the website each visit. And so specifically with that, people are just going on the sites, they're interacting and they're spending more time on that. And then specifically when it comes to the traffic on both sites, you see consistently that it is the top ones are referrals and then direct or organic searches, which means that the brand awareness is working. People do know who Chesla is. And so they're either searching for Chesla themselves, they're organically finding it through searching through Google or other search engines, or they're giving referrals, which I did list to each prospective website. So I can answer any questions that you guys have. But that was kind of the synopsis. It's been pretty consistent in growth throughout the year.
Any questions for Shannon? Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, sorry. Scholarship update, Natalia.
Yeah, hi. So on page 103 is where we're gonna start. So the scholarship opened on March 1st and closed on May 1st, and we received over 1,000 applications this year due to the fact that it was an online application. And the scholarship committee consisted of Shannon, Josh, Danette, and myself. In total, we awarded 166 students. You can go to the next page. And $484,500 in total. And I just had a couple of pages of statistics of the applicants, so, or of the recipients, so you can just go ahead and scroll through those. And then for this year, we couldn't have a actual ceremony like we did last year because of the pandemic. So instead, Shannon created a really nice video of all of our recipients, and Jeanette, Josh, and I all had little speaking parts in it. So after the meeting, either today or tomorrow, Josh or myself will send that out to the board. Does anyone have any questions?
And my calculation is that we have about $3,000 left in the scholarship account. When do we do, when does the board authorize more money for next year's scholarships?
I believe that would be when we're doing the next round, or in the spring when we're budgeting, or when we're doing the next round, to the extent we have excess dollars, as we did this year, could roll some of that into next year's round of funding.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Anything else? Natalia, I just have one quick question before we leave your slides all together. The recipients were overwhelmingly female. Were the applicants overwhelmingly female also? I didn't see that on the chart.
Yeah, so both this year and last year, it's overwhelmingly female in both applicants and gender. I mean, applicants and recipients.
Okay, so the recipients, the percentage of recipients by gender mirrors the percentage of applications by that gender, right?
Yep.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
It is weird, though, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of makes sense, but it is weird to see.
Well, when you say, now that you've said that, you think it kind of makes sense. How would you explain the overwhelming, I mean, it's not even close, 84%. How would you explain that away?
I don't know what it is about female college students, but I feel like they just care more and they're on top of their games when they're submitting things like this.
Okay, we'll let that one go for now, I think. All right, thank you.
You know what? I seem to get aligned with how enrollment is anyway, with females versus males in college. I mean, it's completely and totally towards the female population anyway.
Okay. All right. That's fine. It's very interesting charts, Natalia. Thank you. Okay. Unless there's further questions for Natalia, we have a resolution for amendment to our bylaws. Denise, would you like to walk us through that, and we'll take action on it?
Sure. So on page 109 of your board package is a copy of CHESLA's bylaws with the proposed amendments shown in yellow. The proposed amendments include changing the term chairman to chairperson throughout the bylaws,
Section 203 is amended to include the ability to send notices of special meetings to board members, to a board member's place of business, and via electronic mail. Section 206 is amended to include a specific reference for holding board meetings via video conference. Section 209 is amended to include a procedure, the procedures for board member recusal due to a conflict of interest. And that procedure would require board members to advise chair and the executive director before any committee meeting or board meeting that the board member would be recusing from a matter and the reason recusal. That's so that the chair and the executive director are aware that the recusal would be upcoming at the meeting, and also to any inadvertent board member involvement in the matter where a conflict exists. At the meeting, the after the chairperson announces the matter, the board member should state that he or she is recusing and the reason for the recusal. In addition, the board member is encouraged to leave the room until the conclusion of the matter. It can't be mandated that the board member leave the meeting room because of freedom of information laws, that all public meetings are open to the public. So technically, even though a board member recuses, he would become a member of the public and then could sit and be at the meeting. So it's just encouraged that the board member leave the meeting, and that's to encourage full discussion with board members. And the, let's see, and the last amendment would be the first section of Article 8. There's just a typo there, changing it from Section 802 to 801. And that's it for the changes. If anybody has any questions,
I think there's one other change which was interesting, is that when somebody abstains from a motion, they're supposed to give their reason for abstaining. But I'll move adoption of all these amendments.
Thank you, Marty. Someone like to second that motion?
Second.
We got a second from Steve. Are there any further questions or comments, observations, discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of adopting the amendments to the bylaws as presented, please say aye.
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 Is anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Is there any other business that anyone would like to raise at this point? Hearing none, I'll accept a motion for adjournment, and we will take a break and move into our CSLF meeting. So is there a motion to adjourn the Chesla portion?
Second.
Great. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Thank you. It's unanimous.